So good morning, everyone. And welcome to, we have two visitors from afar, from the cold wastelands of Alberta. Trudy from Edmonton. Actually, Trudy's been with, practiced with us many times. Bryce, for the first time, from Calgary. So I have a koan for us today. It's a short one, and this will be a short talk for a change. This koan is the very first in the Book of Serenity, and it features Shakyamuni Buddha himself and Manjushri, the Bodhisattva of Wisdom, who, although Manjushri is, according to legend, the teacher of the seven Buddhas before Buddha, so he has this, you know, kind of timeless wisdom. He's often, in the sutras, often portrayed as though he's one of the disciples of the Buddha. And he's often in dialogue with the Buddha and others. So in this koan, he appears as one of the disciples. And here's the koan. One day, the world honored one, that's the Buddha, ascended the seat. Manjushri struck the gavel and said, "Clearly observe the Dharma of the King of Dharma. The Dharma of the King of Dharma is thus." Sort of like what Sarah does on the bell. The world-honored one then got down from the seat and left. So apparently that's what the way it was done in those days. The Buddha would ascend to a kind of platform, and there would be an announcement, right? Maybe Manjushri added that second line, "The Dharma of the King of Dharmas is thus," because the commentary seems to suggest that he was already saying too much, even that much. At any rate, the Buddha didn't say anything. He just got back down off the seat. That was it for the day. Now, if I were to do that, if I were to walk out after we just chanted, I think it would seem a little bit copycat. You know, Zenny. what she thinks she's doing? What she doing? You might be relieved, but but no, I'm not the Buddha, so I have to kind of stumble along and try and say something. Anyone who takes the Dharma seat faces that impossible prospect of making some attempt to express the inexpressible. Right? And believe me, it's daunting. So I'll compromise and make this a short-ish talk. According to the Buddha's teaching, both self-inflation, right? I have some special wisdom I'm going to impart, or I really have a clever thing to say, or whatever. Both self-inflation and self-deflation, you know, who am I to have anything to say at all, are equally forms of vanity. So is the three, I'm better than, I'm worse than, and I'm just as good as, equal. They're all self-clinging, they're all vanity, according to the Buddha. And I find that they're so helpful. To observe in myself and others. Because we're always comparing mind. Our whole, you know, culture is built on comparing. Better than, worse than, we're always doing that, right? So I kind of have found that the formality of this practice of sitting on the Dharma seat, you know, putting on the Buddha's robe, and that actually supports letting go of comparing mind. of that self-consciousness, that critical mind. And it supports just offering it up, whatever it happens to be this time round, just as it is. Now these koans typically always have a verse accompanying the koan, the verse written by whatever, you know, the ancient Chinese Zen master who assembled that collection of koans. So the verse for this one is this: "The unique breeze of reality, do you see? Continuously creation runs her loom and shuttle, weaving the ancient brocade, incorporating the forms of spring. But nothing can be done about Manjushri's leaking."
Leaking?
Leaking. The unique breeze of reality. Another translation says the true manner of the primal stage. Oh, what the heck does that mean? The true manner of the primal stage is very abstract. But the more poetic expression is, it uses this word wind, and that's what the original, if you look at it uses wind. Which wind in Chinese and Japanese also means sort of manner, atmosphere, way of being. So reality here is compared to this way of being, is compared to a kind of intricate and subtle woven brocade of forms arising and passing, like the changing seasons. It's quite a, you know, lovely image, isn't it? And then the verse says this odd thing: nothing can be done about Manjushri's leaking. And I checked the original. That's the character is leaking, literally leaking. But what it refers to here is karmic outflow. The way that when our words and our actions are contaminated, whether subtly or grossly, by self-clinging, the effects flow onward and outward. On Wednesday evenings in recent weeks, we've been doing a series called The Field Guide to the Bodhisattvas. And we've been learning the identifying characteristics of the major archetypal bodhisattvas. And one of Manjushri's notable characteristics is his mastery of language. He's always eloquent. He's always holding forth. The Chinese characters used for his name, Man, or Mon in Japanese, is the character for letters or characters. And Ju is exceptional, so he's exceptional with words. And in the sutras, he's often depicted as a sort of lively, eloquent orator, posing questions to the Buddha and engaging in debate and clarifying the teachings. And he often appears as a kind of youthful prodigy, like a young man full of himself, full of his own brilliance, and a little bit of a show-off. So some of the koans kind of poke at him a little for that. And this is an example an example of that, I think, in this koan. I'm going to read an excerpt from the Discourse on the Paramita of Wisdom that gives you a little bit of a flavor of this dialogue and how Manjushri talks with the Buddha. The Buddha begins by asking Manjushri, how should one abide in the Paramita of Wisdom when cultivating it? Manjushri answers, abiding in no Dharma is abiding in the Paramita of Wisdom. Abiding in no Dharma, not clinging to any Dharma. Buddha asks further, why is abiding in no Dharma called abiding in the Paramita of Wisdom? Manjushri replies, because to have no notion of abiding is to abide in the paramita of wisdom. So you know, back and forth they go. Then the Buddha asks, if one thus abides in the paramita of wisdom, will his good roots increase or decrease? Manjushri answers, if one thus abides in the paramita of wisdom, his good roots will not increase or decrease, nor will any dharma, nor will the paramita of wisdom increase or decrease in nature or characteristic. One who thus cultivates the paramita of wisdom will not reject the dharmas of ordinary people, nor cling to the dharma of saints and sages. Why? Because in the light of the paramita of wisdom, there are no dharmas to cling to or reject.
Right? No form, no empty.
Yeah, so he's not clinging to any. And this is, of course, what we chant in the Heart Sutra, which we will in a few more minutes. But you can see how he can, his discourse has the ability to kind of spin us in circles, turn us around, shift us out of our conventional ways of thought and speech. So as I said, sometimes these he appears in these koans in ways that seem to a little bit poke gentle fun at his verbal excesses. And he's gently chided for leaking, for going on and on, being a little bit of a Dharma show-off, I think. There's another Zen story in which Manjushri appears. It's told by Dogen in his Pure Standards for the Zen Community. So he talks about all the different roles in a monastery and how they should be performed. And he tells a number of stories of famous Zen or Chan, all in the Chinese tradition, famous cooks, because that's, of course, a very high-ranking and important practice in a Zen monastery to be the cook. So in this story, the cook at Mount Wutai, and Mount Wutai is the mountain associated with Manjushri. He makes marvelous appearances there, apparently. So the cook was preparing lunch when Manjushri would keep appearing on top of the rice pot. And the cook's trying to work, and there's Manjushri again on top of the rice pot. And finally the cook hits him with his stirring spoon and chases him away. And he says, even if old man Shakyamuni came, I would hit him too. Point being, a Zen cook sits zazen when she's sitting zazen and just cooks when she's just cooking, right? If you're chopping carrots, you just chop carrots. Even if Shakyamuni Buddha or Manjushri himself shows up, you just do your job. It's not a time for debate or conversation. So I find it kind of comforting that even the great Manjushri leaks sometimes. I guess, living as a bodhisattva in this messy world, it's inevitable that we carry traces of our karmic habit patterns. Don't we all? And hopefully we become very well acquainted with them. We do our best to minimize and mitigate any harm that they do, because inevitably we will, step on each other's toes, and worse. And not to let our leaking tendencies stop us from offering up our practice, for living, actualizing our bodhisattva vows, just the way we are. There's a key word in this koan when Manjushri says, the Dharma king of Dharma is thus. That word thus, in the Japanese it's nyo. Sometimes translated as thusness or suchness, just as it is, reality manifesting in this moment, in this place. And then the next, and then the next. Right? It's just another way of expressing what we call emptiness or boundlessness or Buddha nature, thusness. It's a reminder, I think, of the what's at the really core of our practice is Dogen's understanding that practice, realization, and actualization are not separate. They're not linear. They co-manifest. Practice, awakening, and then expressing that awakening through our moment-to-moment life, right? That's they're dynamic. They're processes, not things or states. So Katagiri Roshi, who was one of the... He came over to help Suzuki Roshi at San Francisco Zen Center, and then went on to establish very strong practice in Minnesota. So there are a number of centers in Minnesota still that are in his lineage. And he wrote this book that it's one of those books that's assembled from Dharma talks, but it is titled "You Have to Say Something." So I just want to read you a little bit from the short section that the title's taken from. "You Have to Say Something," and he uses yet another koan to illustrate his point. A monk once asked his master, "What is the essence of Buddhism?" The master said, "Step forward from the top of a 100-foot pole." Mm-hmm. I'm sure many of you have heard this one. How can we go forward from the top of the pole? We'll die, right? Can we go backward? No, we cannot. What then does it mean to step forward from the top of a 100-foot pole? What do you think? What does it mean?
Turn around and dive.
Face your fear. Often it's that. Yeah.
Make our imperfect offering to the world.
Make our imperfect offering, yeah. Means something a little bit different every time you're on that threshold. Right? Mm-hmm. That threshold. Though we are not always conscious of it, we actually face this question daily. As we do become aware of it, we finally ask ourselves, what is life? But there's nothing to say, just silence. This silence is Buddha nature, or suchness, or emptiness. Though everyone experiences this silence, we usually don't notice it because our minds are very busy. Sooner or later, though, we all realize its presence. But then we ask, what is this silence? How can I speak of it? Do I just keep my mouth shut? No, I don't think so. Even if you don't say anything, there is still a problem. When I read this, I thought, yeah, you know, there's silence and there's silence. If there's silence that's contaminated by fear or resentment, you know, or...
withholding.
Withholding, exactly. What are they going to think, right? No, I don't dare. That's contaminated silence. And that silence has outflow too. That is silent leaking.
Yeah.
So, he continues, that is why the Zen master had to speak. He had to say something. He had to speak from that silence, from Buddha nature. When you really understand your life, when you really understand what makes it possible for all beings to exist, there is nothing to say. You just keep silent. But still, you have to say something. You have to do something. You have to live. You have to manifest your life. And this is stepping off the 100-foot pole. Right? You have to take a step. You have to say a word. So it's kind of comforting to me to think about Manjushri's leaking. And and to know that we're in good company when we take that step, say that word, make our offering of our lives just as they are. Yeah. just as they are. So, thank you for listening to my shorter than usual talk. May our intentions equally extend.